Today is March 28th, I think it is, yep. And this is episode number 507 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, I'm editor-in-chief of TMO. And a man ever full of hope. Ever full of hope. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot us a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine, and that'll take you straight to our Facebook group. Now, today is a special day, a day like no other, save the other days that have been very similar, because we are joined by my good friend and Vulcan ambassador, John Martellaro. John?
I am so happy to be here with my good friend. Thanks for having me, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for being here, man. I always enjoy talking. And one of the reasons why I always enjoy talking with you, John, is because we are often able to, especially when we've both been on TDO a lot, we're able to take the discussion to a much more speculative and less news driven direction, and I always enjoy that.
It's fun being a philosopher in addition to a technologist.
It is, yeah, and a futurist too. Okay, hold on. I'm going to make some noise. I'm going to edit this noise out. That my mic was too low. Okay, all right. Absolutely and positively, and
I like taking the 10,000 meter view.
Yeah,
10,000. I don't do feet.
You don't do feet, no.
Yeah.
No, and you don't do like 3,450 some odd feet meters. You go straight from the 10,000 feet. To 10,000 meters, which is what, 34,000 feet?
33,800 feet.
Yeah. 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 Have you ever seen, by the way, the recordings, the films from those nut jobs in the 50s who took the balloon up to like the highest possible altitude that a balloon can be taken and then step off?
No.
The early astronaut training and experimentation.
About 5 years ago, there was a fellow who took a balloon to 100,000 feet and basically skydived off the lip.
Yeah, so that's what I'm talking about. Except for, when they were doing it in the 50s, they didn't really know what would happen.
Hey, guys, watch this.
Well, I mean, this was NASA doing this, or the Air Force, I don't know, one or both. And just fascinating. Like, I can't even imagine. I mean, I know part
NASA didn't exist until like 1960.
So it's probably the Air Force.
NACA before that. There was a National Aeronautics and National Aeronautics Council or something, but NASA was formed in response to the new space effort. I think that NASA started around 1960.
Okay, I accept that. So it's probably the Air Force. And I know that part of it is the lens, but like, I mean, you see the curvature of the Earth, and this guy's going to like step off into like into nothing and fall
and
to see what happens. And I just can't even imagine the courage and bravery that. Some sort of psychopathic thing or something.
Exploration of all the things that can go wrong, and if you live to tell about it, that's unusual.
Yeah,
so many things can go wrong.
So many things can go wrong, and it's just the footage is just phenomenal.
So how high was this balloon?
I don't know. The fact that you saw 100,000 feet says to me that they were probably trying to beat whatever was done in the past. I mean, I'm like pulling that out of nowhere. But you know, certainly really high. And again, no one had done this.
You start to see the curvature of the Earth around 50,000 feet.
It was above that then.
Okay.
Definitely above that. You know, I'd like to take some flat earthers up to about 50,000 feet. What do you think? Just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts, man. Especially the rich ones. Yeah, I read. Did you ever read that editorial I wrote a few years ago on my personal blog at geektells.com?
I don't think so.
It was time for rich flat earthers to you know, buy an airplane and take it up and then, you know, and prove to us that the Earth was flat. I mean, this is so ridiculous. It's so ridiculous.
From the Apollo missions looking back at Earth.
Yeah, all faked, according to them, or something. Just, it's so ridiculous. But, like, you know, I get the delusional weirdo in his mom's basement. I get that person. And I'm very aware of the effect that the constant challenges to science and to facts and to reality, the sort of like weird place that it sends some people, and the constant obsession over conspiracy theories, that the weird place that sends to people, and how they start, you know, as they start including such ideas in their identity, they resist utterly any, you know, imposition of facts that would that threatens that identity. That is a human psychology thing. But, like, you know, someone who's super wealthy, someone like Shaquille O'Neal, like, dude, go, like,
pretty soon you'll be able to do that.
Go. You have the money. Go prove it.
For $250,000, pretty soon you'll be able to take a suborbital flight.
You don't even need to take a suborbital flight. Like hire a plane or a jet of some sort that'll go high enough to prove to us that it's flat. If you think that it's flat, like, you know, and it's like doubly weird with someone like Shaquille O'Neal because he flew a lot. Like, dude.
Well, can I tell you a story?
Of course, please.
I have a friend who was much younger, and my wife and I were talking to
him.
Hold on.
What does much younger mean? Because, you know, listen, sir.
He was in his 20s, and he was talking about his interest in video games, and mm-hmm. he was also talking about what he wanted to do with his career after college. And he expressed some interest in aviation and flight, but mostly in the context of the games that he had played. And I said, you know, there's always a constant need for Air Force and Navy pilots. You know, one of the coolest things you can do is get into ROTC and then take private pilot lessons and then graduate as a second lieutenant, go to pilot school or fly the T-38s or whatever they're using now, and then, you know, work your way up and end up flying off a carrier deck. Coolest thing you can do. And he said, yeah, there's this video game that kind of simulates that. I was kind of playing that. And he just couldn't connect with the reality of doing something in real life, but was mesmerized by doing it on a TV screen or a computer display. And I think there's a little bit of that mentality in the flat earthers. You know, if you get out and you do things, like if you join the Antarctic program and sail to McMurdo and see the world and take a balloon flight and see what's going on, you kind of get more connected to the world. But as long as you're in front of a computer display, you're stuck with whatever it is that, you know, people are presenting to you. And so you become more and more detached from worldly facts. That's my theory.
I like that theory. I like that theory. That said, John, the thing that's most frustrating about it is that it's not difficult to go and prove or disprove, right? I mean, like, you know, especially, again, when you're wealthy. Like, just go do it.
We have a sense of what constitutes proof, too. You have to be practical and intelligent enough to realize that there is a path to solving the problem or to revealing the truth. And sometimes
this particular truth has actually already been well well proven.
I know, but
it's to, but it's the people who disbelieve that proof that I want to put, you know, I want them to put their money up and like.
But yeah, but I mean, if you were trained and intelligent and experienced enough to take action to reveal the truth, like, you know, take a high altitude flight or a balloon flight or do something else, like, you know, inspect the appropriate photographic archives, then you would be intelligent enough to come to the revelation of the truth in the first place. So it's
so you're saying that the very
sort of like my friend who backed away from the exploring reality. As long as you deny mechanisms of actual life and reality, you can live in a fantasy world and create your own truth.
That's a good insight, John. That is good insight, sir. All right. Well, this is the Apple Context Machine, I think. I know I took us in a strange direction.
Let's talk about Apple.
Let us talk about Apple. So the first thing I wanted to talk to you about, and this has been on my mind for a couple of years now, and because that's how long Tim Cook's been talking about the medical industry. And it's interesting. Okay, so what Tim says is basically that the medical industry is like a, you know, $1 trillion or $10 trillion, or I don't know, it's huge, it's massive, it's this large, huge, massive industry. And Tim has explained that Apple can sell into the medical space directly to consumers, and how the entire rest of the medical device industry was all geared around selling to insurance companies, and how that made their solutions not user-friendly, and that Apple has this benefit because Apple, again, can sell directly to consumers, and they don't have to worry about pleasing insurance companies, and so they can pretty much do what they, you know, do what they want, and they can make the best product and blah 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 blah. Okay, I get that. So hence Apple Watch and its ever greater or ever increased, I should say, focus on medical data, health activity, things like that.
Yep.
Right? So I get that part.
Right.
So they can sell us Apple Watches, and of course if they sold us an Apple Watch, then we probably already have an Apple phone, or we're gonna need one. Apple phone. iPhone, I like to call them sometimes. And so, you know, so, and then Apple is making a profit on this hardware, and, you know, that's always been Apple's modus operandi, is to actually make money on its hardware and sell it to us. Okay. I get that. But Tim Cook has also talked about the importance of data, health data, and protecting and accumulating and managing and using our health records. And that he thinks that Apple can play a very important role in terms of health records. And we've seen some of that, right? Because there are some insurance companies, some hospital networks, I think, that will take that will take data from your iPhone.
Yeah, like an ECG. You can convert it to a PDF and supply it to your heart doctor.
Okay, but here's my question. When Tim Cook talks about health care records and getting a little tiny piece of that multi-trillion-dollar business, or trillion, I forget exactly how big it is, but it's huge, getting a piece of that huge business, how else is he talking about making money? Because I don't think it is just selling us the hardware. I don't think, like, I mean, not even like the, you know, the non-invasive glucose monitoring, like, you know, being able to do features like that, the ECG stuff. I think Tim's got a bigger goal there, and I don't know what it is.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is all the different players and all the vested interests. And wrestling control from an industry is really hard. We've seen how long it took Apple to get into the TV production business, how long it took them to develop infrastructure of the Apple TV and that TV app and services. I hate to say it, but it's sort of like Microsoft, you know, getting through version 1, 2, and 3. Apple kind of experiments and nibbles till they get things right sometimes. And I got to weigh that in my mind against the contrast of monetization of health data. I'm not quite sure that I see a clear picture about why Apple would want to make money off of health data yet. They may be thinking far enough.
No, hold on. Yet. Backtrack. I'm not saying that Apple's going to is going to profit from that data. What I meant was that I think Apple has some kind of plan for making money from providing health management, health data management as a service. Not from monetizing the data itself. In no way whatsoever did I mean that.
Well, fill me in on what you think the scenario might be, because I'm hazy myself.
Well, that's just it. I don't really know. I don't know if I'm reading too much into what he said, or if I'm not reading enough into what he said, or if, you know, it really just is as simple as Apple thinks it can sell more devices. You know, it could be just that simple. But if Apple is going to be the holder, like, so one of the things that he's talked about is the fact that if our health data is held securely on our phones, that we are in control of it instead of hospitals and doctors and insurance companies.
Some of it. There's a whole lot of other health data that is beyond the reach of the Apple Watch, of course.
Absolutely. Right. Unless, of course, Apple actually brings to market a service that will incorporate all that other data, too. Let's call it, and I don't think for a second this is what it would be called, but let's call it Apple Health Records. And with Apple Health Records, hospitals, insurance companies, doctors can add data, add information, add your reports, your history, your test results and things like that, and it stays securely on your phone. Of course, it also probably still stays securely with them too.
Well, there's two pieces to this in my mind. One is the data that the Apple Watch collects and manages. Your health, your steps, your walking, your heart rate, your ECG, maybe sometimes in the future, your blood glucose. There's a whole wealth of other information that is beyond that. Probably 99% of your health data is beyond that. Things like x-rays, MRIs. There's maybe 99% of the data that is of interest about you is outside the capability of the Apple Watch. There's x-rays, there's MRIs, there's CAT scans, there's blood chemistry, there's physiological testing, neurological testing. That information is held by your doctor who does the tests. And so the question is, how much of the data should you be aware of and managing? I mean, if I had all the information that was available about me in my phone, I would be overwhelmed. So right now there's a bits and pieces of it. Like I said before, if the doctor needs my latest ECG and doesn't want to do it in the office, he can take a look at it real quick, but he probably wants to do his own. He may be skeptical about the heart rate monitoring. And maybe he wants to just, you know, check and listen to your lungs himself with a stethoscope. So the question in my mind is, what limited data they have on your phone about your health and fitness, how does that fit into the picture of all the doctors you may visit?
Well, does Apple have plans for us to be able to control our health records outside of the scope of what Apple Watch and iPhone can capture.
So a person might have a family doctor. They might have some other doctors that have attended to them for specific kinds of problems. Maybe they have diabetes. They have an endocrinologist to talk to, or, you know, various different kinds of illnesses. And so if you get into the business of accessing your doctor's portal and downloading all that information and managing it, that's kind of hard to do. It's kind of difficult to manage and understand all that information. How much of that data do you need to have on your phone? If the doctor already has it and you go visit him, he has all that access to all that information as well. So which way does the data flow? You know, and why should you be carrying around gigabytes or terabytes of information that's already at your doctor's office? So I'm a little hazy about that mechanism.
Well, from the mechanism standpoint, I get the haziness. From the this is me, and I should be able to have that information. I get.
But not in order to digest it or diagnose it, because that's beyond your capability.
Says you.
If you look at a blood test, there's all sorts of terms and different elements of a blood test that are hard to understand. You have to go to Wikipedia and read up on every one.
I get that. And of course,
your ability.
Now enter software that can actually interpret that stuff for us. And that should become ever more possible as machine learning.
Oh, well, that's an interesting subject. Sounds kind of scary to me, a little bit dangerous. There's certainly no mechanism in place right now for an AI to analyze a CBC.
Yeah, not now, but maybe that's one of the things that Apple wants to do. Like when Tim said that, I definitely had, when Tim talked about wanting a small piece of this industry and talking about the importance of health records, I definitely had the impression that we're talking like long play here.
Yeah, and that requires a vision. It requires a pretty good strategy about how this data, as I've said in the last few minutes, you're going to integrate with the doctor's data. Are you going to integrate with all of it? Because if there's missing pieces, then you don't have the whole picture. Whether you're going to store it all in one place and then you're going to dump it at the doctor's office, or whether he's going to go to his own records and see what he did.
Yeah, so to your point, it is super complex. And
it is.
And it is both complex and complicated. So I just don't have a feeling about what Tim was hinting at. I think that there's smoke to this fire, or the fire to the smoke. Like, I mean, I don't think he was casually mentioning this at all. I think this is a big deal for Apple, and I think this is where some of those big R&D budgets are going to.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we have this Goldman Sachs Apple card is because probably a lot of Apple executives were frustrated with their current credit cards and the way it worked. Apple executives were certainly exasperated with iPhones around 2005. With cell phones, flip phones of the time, and said, we can do better. Let's build a phone the way we imagine.
Let's build a phone and let's use that stuff we've been working on for a tablet.
Yeah, yeah. So,
right, because that started off earlier.
Maybe for a tablet. Apple executives have had experiences in the doctor's offices where they wish the system were better, and they think we can make the world a better place by engaging in certain ways. But whether there's a coherent picture, whether Apple sees a future and has a vision where they play a very strong role in all of your medical records, that's hard. I think the industry's too vested. There's too many players involved, hospitals, doctor's offices, medical records, different systems.
Well, maybe that's what Apple thinks it can solve.
That's a big problem.
Right? That's a huge problem. That's a huge problem. Apple clearly thought it could solve cars. That's a huge problem.
It sounds easy in comparison.
But yeah, I mean, like, does Apple have enough hubris to think that it can also solve that? Like, actually make health records and their portability, like, make it make sense and protect, you know, have the user protected, and, you know, instead of letting insurance companies, like, profit from monetizing our data.
Well, sometimes maybe you don't have a real clear picture of the future. I just saw a tweet this morning from a local meteorologist here in the Denver area, and it said, if the future path seems very clear to you, you're probably on somebody else's path.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So,
oh, I like that.
It's pretty cool. So maybe what Apple's doing is saying, we want to make the world a better place. We have the opportunity for people to have visibility into their pulse and their electrocardiogram and their fitness to some extent. We know that we can make the world a better place by organizing this information, and who knows where it's going to go. But yeah, if we don't get involved and we don't become a player, we're poorly positioned to take the next step, even though it may be a hazy future. So that's, I think, where they are.
Probably. That is probably where Apple is on this. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, and this is like, this is such big picture stuff, you know, and this is what I think Tim Cook means when he talks about having a deep pipeline. You know, my buddy John Keat and I go back and forth and get really tense about what the heck a deep pipeline means, because, you know, John Keat wants the deep pipeline to mean existing product lines. And I think that Tim Cook has been telling us they've got this deep pipeline for years, and it's big picture stuff. And it's big picture stuff that further transforms Apple away from being this PC maker, this Mac maker.
Yeah, what are the ways in which Apple could make life better for you? Certainly it doesn't have anything to do with buying groceries or selecting products at Walmart, but certainly Apple can make life better for us in terms of not using rare and expensive and poisonous chemicals in their phones, by treating the environment right, by making its own energy, by helping us manage our health and fitness data, by giving us a better quality of credit card, a better experience. So Apple picks and chooses, and sometimes it makes life better for us in ways that aren't immediately monetizable, and sometimes there's hope that in the future it will be, and sometimes there's a more immediate possibility for monetization, like Apple News Plus. So I think there's a spectrum. I don't think you can apply a uniform philosophy to all the different ways Apple wants to make life better for us. Some are not as easily monetized as others. And that's okay.
Yeah, it is okay. It is okay. It is okay.
Want to talk about Apple TV?
Yeah, I do. I do. I would like it if we could have, like, cracked that issue open and solved it. But, you know, it turns out that we can't. I definitely enjoyed talking to you about it, because this really has been on my mind now for years.
Did I clarify anything?
I don't know. I think we both banged on it a little bit. I imagine that we are probably not close to what Apple is actually wanting to do, but it certainly was a lot of fun stuff to think about.
Yeah.
That's my guess, that we're not close. So, uh, Apple TV. We have two aspects of Apple TV. Right? We've got the Apple TV hardware. We've got the Apple TV platform. And its expansion to third-party software, or third-party hardware, and what that means. What do you think?
Yeah, it's sort of like the ugly child of Apple. It doesn't have the glory of the iPhone or the Apple Watch.
Well, it's the only product line that Apple has ever called a hobby.
Yeah. Yeah, and now that Apple TV Plus has been announced, it's a challenge to put into context just exactly how the Apple TV hardware plays into this. Saw an article recently that talked about how Apple doesn't need the Apple TV anymore because it's got deals with LG, Samsung, and Sony to provide Apple TV software, TV OS, into different televisions that they're working with Roku and Amazon. And so it's all too easy to fall for the idea that Apple's neglecting the Apple TV hardware. Plus, the Apple TV itself doesn't have a huge market share because it's so expensive, and it's expensive because it's a really capable box. I mean, after all, it's got the theoretical capability of HLG. In fact, it has Dolby Vision, which I use all the time. It has Dolby Atmos. It has HDR10 as a fallback. It's got plenty of storage. It's quality construction.
It doesn't have plenty of storage. It doesn't have any storage. What are you talking about?
There's a 32 gig and a 64 gig, right?
Yeah, that's not enough storage, man. That's not enough storage.
Well, it's clearly a capable little box. And because it's 4K, and nothing new has come along after Dolby Vision and 4K to supplant that, there's no need for a new model. I mean, I bought my Apple TV 4K in October of 2017. And prior to that, I was very, very frustrated that Apple wasn't coming out with a 4K model. But by October of 17, they finally did. So the question is, how do you update it? Well, you don't really need to update it. It's got everything it needs. So people are getting a little bit nervous about the Apple TV hardware and thinking that maybe this is something Apple is getting out of. But I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think that's actually ridiculous. And it is ridiculous. I think that Apple does still need the Apple TV for a number of reasons. For one thing, it's a Siri hub, right? So, So that alone is a fantastic reason for Apple to actually have this thing. Plus it does a lot of other stuff. But let me ask you a question. I have an issue with DirecTV Now. I know you don't use DirecTV Now.
Oh, no. DirecTV Now, right? Yeah. I have the actual dish and hardware.
Right. So with the DirecTV Now app on Apple TV sucks. It's terrible. It's just buggy, performs poorly. Like, I have to quit the app all the time to get it to refresh the guide. I can go on and on and on with the problems with that app. But there's one problem where the sound drops out that I at first attributed solely to DirecTV Now. But I recently realized that it was also affecting Netflix and Amazon Prime shows. So it's clearly that one little thing. So, like, I'm watching and it gets about 10, 15 seconds into a new show and then the sound drops off. And then if I pause and start it again, it fast forwards. And then comes back with sound. Have you ever experienced that?
I have not.
Well, I'm wondering if that actually isn't a bandwidth issue. Because if it's a bandwidth issue, I'm not going to blame it on the hardware. But if it's not a bandwidth issue, it is the software. And
could be latency plus packet loss.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. I'm wondering if anyone else has experienced that. If you have, drop a note over on Facebook or write me at ACM at MacObserver.com. I'd love to hear from you.
But the only issue I have is that Amazon Prime television is a lot slower than Netflix in kicking in high resolution. Amazon Prime, when you first start watching a show, is kind of slow to kick in high definition. It'll be blocky for a few seconds, whereas Netflix is always crisp out of the gate. So that's the only problem I have, and it's not a big problem.
Yeah, fair enough. And I'm wondering, is that Amazon or is that Apple TV?
I watch Amazon Prime on my Apple TV 4K.
Yeah, but is that an issue with the Amazon Prime software on your Apple TV, or is that an issue with the Apple TV software?
I think the Netflix engineers are smarter about how to figure out what your bandwidth is and to dynamically ramp up the resolution in a graceful way, better than Amazon engineers have been able to figure out. That's my working theory. Because Netflix has been doing this for a long time. And they have some crack video engineers who understand bandwidth and resolution and how to deliver different resolutions and different to different kinds of customers and capabilities. And the handshaking that the app does back to Amazon or back to Netflix is crucial to tell the server how to deliver the speeds.
So assuming you're right on that, and I imagine you probably are, that's not an Apple TV issue. That's an Amazon Prime issue.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about issues. That's the only one I have.
Okay, well, so now Apple is going to be doing this channels business where your Amazon Prime content can go through channels.
Yeah, I have been a bit skeptical about that.
Why?
Because there's always a compromise in being able to select the content you want. It's tough enough to figure out what to watch and find it. And a lot of quality shows are not revealed. I mean, when you think about the way that Amazon Prime and the Netflix user guide or video guide work, I mean, there's about 10 or 15 rows. There's about 10 or 15 columns of shows that are recommended to you out of the thousands and thousands of movies and TV shows. And so it's all too easy to fall into the trap of taking whatever it is that's in your face and watching it, as opposed to researching and figuring out what good content is and then going and finding it through Siri search or text search. And so when you bleed that into a channel through the TV app, it's even worse, I think, in that you're just going to be presented with a really diluted version of what's available.
Well, I guess that is possible. It remains to be seen if that's the case, of course. Right.
Yeah, I can't wait to see how that's actually going to work in practice. They showed during the March 25th event the Watch Next stuff, and maybe what they're doing is they're taking the stuff that's in your current Watch Next list and aggregating it together. And it seems like you lose a little bit of control in that process.
That's possible.
So that's what I'm eager to see.
I'm wondering if they will they didn't announce it, but I would love it, of course, if DirecTV now if their content was allowed to be on it, because I would certainly use the Channels app before I would use the DirecTV Now app. Because it's really bad. Did I mention that it's really bad?
I thought if you had a DirecTV subscription, you were a paying customer, that you could capture DirecTV content with DirecTV Now.
Yeah, DirecTV Now has a really awful rudimentary DVR, and it's truly awful.
I'm talking about content. Isn't it not true that in the new Apple TV app that you'll be able to access DirecTV content if you're already a paid subscriber?
Are you talking about in the Channels app?
Yeah.
The TV app or the Channels app?
Well, I thought the TV app was being upgraded. Is there a new nomenclature that I don't know about?
Well, the new channel that Apple announced, the new thing that Apple announced is called Channels.
Oh, okay.
And channels is what's going to be available on Roku and smart TVs, some smart TVs and Roku devices, and then Amazon's Fire TV.
Well, I'm confused because I thought there was an upgrade to the TV app in iOS and tvOS that allowed you to aggregate those.
Isn't that those, the channels app?
Is it?
Well, fortunately, this is ACM, right? So, you know, as we don't do our homework at a time. Maybe I was just paying attention
during the show, but I thought there was a new TV app that was providing this aggregation for you.
Yeah, it's called Channels, Apple TV Channels.
Oh, okay. Well, is Apple TV Channels the full name of the app?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unless I'm the one who's misunderstanding.
It's a new app like the former TV app. With more capability,
yeah,
and newly minted name as Apple TV
Channels
yeah. app,
yeah, okay. And this is separate from Apple TV Plus. Although I assume Apple TV Plus will be available in Channels, which won't be confusing.
I assume that too. And the price you pay for not having to switch between apps is a price that many may not be able to appreciate or stomach or find too pablum-esque. I don't know. I don't mind changing apps. At least I know where I am and I know what I'm doing. But, you know, changing inputs has always been a problem for customers.
Yeah.
And certainly changing between apps. I mean, right now, when we want to watch Amazon Prime, we go to the Amazon Prime app, and we want to watch Netflix, we go to the Netflix app, and it doesn't bother us at all to switch between those. But I guess that's too annoying for some people. What? And that simplification always comes with a price.
Yeah, but Apple has an outstanding track record at making that simplification work.
I can't wait to see how it works.
Yeah. And I can't wait to see how TV Plus integrates with Channels as well.
And I can't wait to see how your subscriptions are managed visually.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden you're going to have this opportunity to subscribe to CBS All Access or HBO. And will there be a facility or a page on your Apple TV that shows you all the subscriptions that you're subscribed to and when they expire and how much it's costing you and allowing you to cancel when you need to. I can't wait to see how that's going to work.
I can't either. So back to the central thing of whether or not Apple no longer needs Apple TV, the hardware. Again, I think that's, it's really bad analysis to suggest that Apple no longer needs the Apple TV hardware. That's really bad analysis.
Yeah, and there's another aspect of this too. One of the things I tell my readers to do is to turn off the Wi-Fi on their smart TV so that it is dumb and it cannot communicate with the world, and drive it with their Apple TV either directly input to one of the HDMI inputs or through a receiver where they can have multiple devices connected and then one line going into their HDMI input of their TV. And the reason for this is that the TV can't spy on you. It can't report up what you're watching. It can't listen to you through microphones, which some TVs can do that have voice input. And so you turned your smart TV into a dumb TV that is deaf, dumb, and blind, and it can only display what the Apple TV feeds it. And the Apple TV, tvOS is pretty secure. It's kept updated. Apple protects your privacy on that device, although there are rumors that Apple may be sharing some information about what you watch. But at least the opportunities for spying and loss of privacy are minimized.
For the record, I would be shocked if those stories are true.
But if you've got a smart TV that's connected to Wi-Fi in your house, all bets are off. If the TV itself, the operating system of the TV, whether it's Android or whatever TV operating system, Tizen or whatever it's using, that operating system is exposed to the internet in some fashion.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
And the TV is constantly talking to the mothership about what you're doing. And if you run the smart TV apps, those apps also have the opportunity to report and do things on you. So if Apple were to discontinue the Apple TV, I would, and I had to run the smart TV apps on my TV on Wi-Fi, I would be very annoyed.
Yep. Totally agreed. And Apple doesn't even make that privacy case all that well. But again, I will say that I would be shocked if those reports are true. That it's those, the reports that Apple is sharing information about what we're watching. I'd be flabbergasted if that were true.
Yeah, you have to make a decision about which company you're going to depend on and who you're going to trust. It reminds me of the old TV show from the old days, Who Do You Trust?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point. So the other interesting thing to me is going to be like how TV Plus will integrate with channels from a like an organizational standpoint. I mean, it obviously has to. Apple can't offer channels and say that channels basically, you know, let you watch all your shows, although, you know, all your shows except for what you watch on Netflix, but whatevs. Apple can't do that and then not include its own original shows too. So clearly, Apple TV Plus will be integrated into channels as well.
Yeah, I think what they're depending on is the quality of the content. The opposite opportunity would be to strong arm you somehow, to force you into abandoning the competition. And I warned about that a while back. I think when Apple's trying to break into the market and they have to expose you to quality content, and by charging you too much and isolating it and strong arming you and making you abandon all others in favor of Apple TV Plus would be a mistake.
Yeah, I don't think Apple can do that any more than Amazon or Netflix could do that. I mean, it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
It's just not. It's not a zero-sum game. And there's plenty of room for all these. Like, so I know that one of your working premises, John, is that we're at some point going to be in a state where we can't do, most people can't do all of the streaming services. Most people already don't do all the streaming services, all the services with original content. You know, Hulu's got great content, Netflix has got great content, Amazon has got great content, YouTube has content. Please note the lack of the word great, but some of it actually may be really good. I don't even know. Apple's coming out with its content. We're hoping it's great. The Disney's going to be doing its thing. CBS has got All Access. I'm sure that ABC and CBS have similar things coming along. There's a freaking Stargate service too. If you want to get the Stargate content, so at some point we can't do all of those things. Even if we could, we couldn't watch everything because there's just too much great content out there. And the reality is that people will pick a subset of services that they want. And that's not a zero-sum game. Some people will choose Apple service. Some people won't.
Yeah, I realize that. It's a delicate issue. There are people who are manipulatable and are eager to have everything and are frustrated by what it costs them. And then there are people who say, I can't have everything. And there are shows which I'm not going to be able to watch. I mean, I do that with HBO. I mean, a long time ago, we just decided we weren't going to do HBO. And I know that HBO has a lot of good content, but there's so much other stuff that's available on Netflix and Amazon that we've been watching that you just have to satisfy yourself that stuff that's the stuff that you limit yourself to is okay, and not be upset about some offbeat show that everybody's raving about. It's,
Hold on.
Envy is not a great idea here.
That calculus that you just expressed is your calculus. And that you're actually, yeah.
It's the way we deal with the glut of content.
It's the way your household deals with the glut of content.
Yeah.
Every household is going to deal with that differently.
That's right.
Right. For some people, HBO is indispensable.
I'm just giving an example of.
Yeah.
I'm always talking about strategies, strategies for security, strategies for content viewing, strategies for hardware selection. You got to have a strategy. You got to have underlying beliefs and values and needs, and then convert those into a strategy and then stick with it. That's my strategy.
Right. And everybody's got their own strategy. Different people are going to pick different things, and it's okay if some people don't choose Apple TV Plus. And it's okay if some people choose or don't choose Netflix, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not a zero-sum game. Apple doesn't have to put everyone else out of business in order to succeed with this.
That's right.
The point of Apple TV Plus is to sell services, actually. We can say this, right? This is a departure from Apple in the past where it's like everything was designed to sell devices. This is designed to sell devices, but it's also designed to get services revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, can I please take my victory lap over this free nonsense? Pricing will be announced, sir, in the fall. Ming-Chi is wrong as Rob Enderle. Quo said it would be free. You thought it would be free.
Well, as we were talking about with Kelly and Charlotte this morning on TDO, there could be a nuance there. There could be a situation where if you subscribe to, say, News Plus and
you get the video free, come music, on.
You get the video free.
No, yes. No, yeah. No. No. There wait, might be
wait
bundling.
Wait a minute. If you, there could be bundling in such a way that is an enticement for you to subscribe to other services, which is probably why Apple didn't announce the price of Apple TV Plus. And then you get Apple TV Plus thrown in for free in a bundle. But if you want to pay for it individually, you can pay your $9.99.
Okay. All right. So your premise, John, is that Apple is going to take the premium thing that it produces, and it's going to make that the add-on to content that other people produce. The free add-on, the worthless thing, the thing that doesn't give any additive revenue. That's your premise?
Well, if you pay for the bundle, you're paying Apple money.
Okay, paying for a bundle is not the same as buying one thing and getting Apple TV Plus for free.
No, I'm saying there could be one possibility of free, and that it could have been the source of the news that we heard about Apple TV Plus being free. It could be an enticement to subscribe to a bundle. Now, we were talking on TDO about annual revenue. Amazon Prime provides a whole wealth of services for $115 a year, roughly. Now you get Apple TV Prime Television, you get free Apple two-day TV delivery, Plus, you get storage, you get Amazon Prime Video, I'm sorry, you get storage, you get free two-day delivery, you get music, you get books. There's all sorts of services that are bundled into $115 a year. If Apple were to take all of its new services that they announced, four of them, and charge $10 a month or $9.99. That's $40 a month. That's $500 a year. How are people going to react to that in comparison to Amazon Prime? People are just going to not stomach $500 a year out of the blue when they've been paying maybe $9.99 a month for Apple Music. So Apple's got to be able to present a flexible portfolio of choices and still generate some substantial revenue.
Okay. While bundling is not free, and bundling is not pay for the other ones to get the video stuff for free. Like Apple TV Plus is Apple's content crown jewel. All the content from Apple Music produced by other people. all the content in Apple News Plus produced by other people.
If Apple did, we just talked about how they have to break into the market, and so out of the gate, charging $9.99 a month, and then there's Disney coming along, probably $10 to $12 a month, Disney Plus.
So you're back to the zero sum game.
Well, I'm saying Apple has to break into this market somehow.
They're not going to break into this market by giving it away for free. Hence, pricing will be announced in the fall.
Well, I mean, if that's the only service you want to subscribe to, it'll be $10 a month. Maybe it'll be six.
No. It's gonna be more than music. It'll be between 10 and 20.
I disagree, sir. They can't do that. Not with Netflix charging $14 for a 4K and Amazon Prime charging $10 a month.
I just said between 10 and 20. That could be 10, it could be 20, it could be 15, it could be 13. So, I mean, Apple could certainly charge.
You can't say between 10 and 20 and then say it's going to be 10. If you're saying it's going to be between 10 and 20.
No, it's literally going to be in the range of 10 to 20. It's going to be somewhere in that range. It will not be cheaper than Apple Music.
Let's say it's 12. And then you got to pay for Apple News Plus, which is 10. That's 22.
You don't gotta.
Well, you could. The services that are available.
Right. And Apple could end up bundling these. I hope that Apple bundles
them. You're probably already paying for music, so there's another 10. So now we're up to $32 a month.
Yeah. That's $360 a year. I hope that Apple bundles here, but it's not going to be free. It won't be free. It's never going to be free.
In any kind of bundle, in any kind of incentive, in any kind of introductory program, I disagree. Maybe it'll be free for 3 months, like we talked about before. Maybe
that is a possibility. That's a likelihood that there will be an introductory free period, but it will not be a free service as it was reported earlier. To wit, pricing will be announced in the fall.
Well, pricing means could be zero.
Oh, come on, John. You're just phoning it in now, man.
Well, if pricing is zero, then that's the pricing, right?
No, that's not right. I'm not even gonna give that like a courtesy pedantic acceptance. It's just not right. All right, so what I'm hearing from this is I get to take my victory lap. Thank you very much.
Well, there was no formal bet, so I don't owe you lunch.
No, this is correct. We did not. Wait, did we not have a bet on this?
No, I don't think we formally bet on this one.
Oh, man, we need that gosh darn betting app.
Yeah, we do. I thought Kelly was going to write that for us.
Yeah, she was supposed to. What's up with that, Kelly? Come on. All right. So listen, I want to thank you so much for joining me, man. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Well, you're very welcome.
Especially
this was
the
fun
part where you were wrong about Apple TV Plus being free.
Shucks. See how he manipulates me, folks.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're a gentleman and I'm not. That's how I roll, man.
You are a gentleman.
All right. I do. I try to be a gentleman. I'm just not as... I am not as gentlemanly as you, because no one is. You, sir, are the consummate.
Except for all the times I've screwed up and gone non-G-rated on TDO.
I still don't get that, sir. How is it that you are the person who makes us edit all the time?
I don't know. It's a mystery.
It's a
mystery of Spock's brain.
Yeah. Mystery of Spock's brain. Brain and brain. What is brain?
Out of control.
So, I'm going to do this. And then I'm going to switch over to this app. There we go. And say that's all for this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to add, comment on, or question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth, I like to call it, is provided by CashFly, the basis by Boom Recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week. And John Martellaro, thank you for joining me.
It was fracking awesome.
I appreciate it.